Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. I think it was on yesterday's programme when one woman told us of what she was 10 years of age and or 11 maybe, her teacher, her English teacher, she was in first year in second level, her English teacher caught her looking in the mirror and accused her of that awful sin and crime of vanity, believe it or not. But the punishment was she had to stand, the victim, the child, had to stand facing the back wall every single English class during that year. So the nun never saw her face and this pupil never saw the teacher. Evelyn, good afternoon. Again, vanity may have come into this as a crime in the Ireland of the 60s and the 70s. Evelyn, what happened in your case?
Coming to school, I had a couple of feathers in my hair. This was 77. I was 16 years of age. Yeah. I was experimenting with what colour I should dye my hair. Was the beginning of punk rock and that.
Yeah.
And a nun came up to me and flicked my hair with a rolled up piece of paper, said, "What's this?" And I said, "Well, it's obviously a feather."
Yes.
And she went to hit me. And I grabbed her wrist.
Yeah.
I said, "You won't hit me," because I'd seen her hit other girls before. Excuse me, I'm getting a bit upset now. But I grabbed her wrist and... Yeah. Even now, as I'm speaking, my hands are tight, and because I wasn't going to let her hit me.
Yeah.
And with that, there was her and two other nuns, and they pushed me into a cupboard. It wasn't a room; it was a cupboard that you would put a sheet of music into, a sweeping brush, 3 foot by 4, no light or anything, and locked me in that cupboard. I was there from the morning until lunchtime.
No.
And since then, I suffer terrible with claustrophobia. I my own bedroom, I keep the door open in my own bedroom. I have my doors open in my apartment. I don't like closed doors at all. I found it totally unfair, bullying. One time my mum came up to the school as well, soon after that. And the nun said to my mother, in front of me, she said, "Don't bother sending her to school. She's got nothing upstairs," pointing at her head. She said, "Put her in a factory." Now, I don't see anything wrong with working in a factory, but obviously the nuns thought there was something wrong with it. These nuns that I went to, I won't name who they are, but they were quite a respectable South Dublin convent that many people wanted to get their children into. They were very cruel and sarcastic about how girls looked as well.
Okay.
One of my friends was quite a full-figured girl, and at that age, one can be very thin 1 week, and next term, the body can fill out.
Yeah.
And my friend was very full-figured, and a nun called her up to the front of the class and said, look, girls, can she not get a better jumper? She's bursting out this one because she was top-heavy. And my poor friend was, like, crying in the front of the class.
Yeah.
You know, it was like they were jealous of her, jealous of her femininity, you know?
And the claustrophobe, they'd been thrown into a cupboard. Reminds me, yesterday, the young boy, I think he was just 5, primary school, his teacher decided that he was too quiet. That was a crime as well, and he was placed in what he didn't know what the room was. The door was open, and he looked down into pitch black darkness, and she told him to stay there. So he sat on the stair, not knowing how long he was going to be there for, not knowing if the door would ever be unlocked at that age. How do you understand a punishment like that? But that man, you say you can't sleep with doors closed. That man told us he could only sleep with a light on And the only time he could sleep with a light off was when he reached 40 years of age. He had to leave a light on in the room because of that incident. So the psychological scars are horrific, horrific, horrific.
Yeah, they are. And I didn't realise how much so until I'm on the phone now and my body's actually rattling. Yeah. As I'm speaking with you, my body is shaking. My whole body is shaking. And I developed a stutter as well. Mm-hmm. I try and take hold of it and control it myself. But, you know, I was there from the morning until lunch again, not knowing when I was going to get out.
Yes, yes.
I didn't know when I was going to get out. There was no light. It was pitch black.
Of course.
I don't know whether they were going to leave me there and leave me locked up and go home or whatever. I had to close my eyes and mentally take myself off to the seaside. That's the only way I could survive it while I was in it.
And could you hear noises when you were in the cupboard, Evelyn?
No, I couldn't hear anything because it was connected to the music room. So yeah. I think that is, you know, it was soundproof because of
the music room probably would have been empty for a lot of the time or whatever.
Yeah.
Good God.
I didn't hear anybody at all near it. Now, there was one particular nun who was very, very, very cruel. She was the headmistress. And I had to pass her office to get to my classroom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, say there's various different three or four floors in the school, and her office happened to be on the same floor as my class that I had to pass. And every time I passed, she would find some excuse. And one time she had said to me, what's that smell? What's that smell? And I said, well, actually, that's patchouli. Where did you get such a thing? And I said, in an Indian bazaar. And she said, does your parents know you go into such a place? I said, I've been in the Indian bazaar in the dandelion market with my mother and father several times. Mm-hmm. And the shock on her face, it was something from hell or something, you know.
Crazy. Did you scream out when you were in the cupboard? Did you kick? Because you did that magnificent thing, very brave, when she flicked the feathers in your hair, the nun, and then she went to hit you. You grabbed her wrist you said, you won't hit me.
No, she wasn't going to hit me because I'd seen her hit others.
I know.
She wasn't going to hit me. Now, she would have been only very near to my own size. You know, she was a small nun. But I didn't feel any of what I would have respected with older people to me, and I still feel that, you know, to respect the elderly, and I'm probably elderly myself now compared to the kids, but I didn't feel any respect for her at all because she went to hit me like I had seen her hit others. But
at any stage, Evelyn, did anyone come back and say, are you okay in there, Evelyn?
No. The nun came to me at the end of the day.
And it would have been no use kicking and screaming because no one would have heard you.
No one would. There was nobody there. I rattled at the door at first, and when I realised there was no getting out, I didn't want to play. I didn't know whether they were standing outside the door laughing or whatever. Yeah. So I didn't make any further efforts to get out. I just stayed quiet.
Okay.
And because I was in a state of panic, and part of me had to calm myself down so that I didn't go into a big panic. I had to mentally struggle to keep myself calm.
Oh, that was an incredibly powerful thing to try and do, because if you'd gone into a panic attack, Evelyn.
Because I have done since if I'm locked in places.
Yeah.
And as soon as if I do get locked in somewhere, I'm straight back in that cupboard again.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, Evelyn, thanks.
Now, I never told my parents about that.
Yeah.
And they're both dead now.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that my mother would have stood up for me. But I didn't want to bring any trouble home, you know.
Yeah, like so many. Thanks, Evelyn. Yeah. Thank you.
And I also want to say that the people who have phoned have been very, very brave, and they have given permission for many others to speak out.
Yeah, here.
And to recognise that Ireland is a very broken, fractured society. We're a very broken, fractured society. Apart from institutional abuse, the educational system has damaged so many adults in this country. And when you see little ones, like you, I've heard you say, going to school, you know, back to school, and they love it and delighted, and how little they are and how full of enthusiasm they are and their dreams. Like, they said to my mother in front of me, don't bother sending her to school. Put her in a factory. She's got nothing upstairs. As I said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with working in a factory.
I know, but
I'm a multimedia artist, and I've sold my work between Belfast and Australia. Yeah. There's all different forms of intelligence, and I'm sure they were well aware of that then as well.
Yeah. Evelyn, thank you so much. That's Evelyn Joe at rt.ie 51551. Let's go to Frank, then Angie, then Margaret. Frank, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, just listen to that woman. Yeah. I can remember being put in the cloakroom, but it wasn't on the scale that she was. Like, you know, it was a big cloakroom. There was a window in it. You could look out. But I was only a kid, Joe. I mean, I'm talking about Dublin Christian Brothers. You know, I got beatings in there, held up by the ear, and the leather strap, Joe.
Yeah.
Legs. They didn't, like, I mean, he wasn't beating you where it wouldn't show. He didn't care, Joe. But you know what? I remember, Joe, getting the beating. And one thing that provoked the most with me was I refused to cry.
Yeah.
I wouldn't cry. I bit me lip, Joe. I remember being at the front of the class and I was getting this beating. Now, I wasn't the only one.
I know.
It went through, you know. And no matter how academic a guy was in the class, if he dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's and whatever, nobody was immune from it.
Yeah.
You know. But I remember, I wouldn't cry. I just stood there, Joe, and I took the knee, and he slapped me, and he crossed the head, across the back, and I just stood there. I stood there. Now, I wanted to cry. Don't get me wrong. I wanted, but I wouldn't give in. I wouldn't, and I bit my lip, and because I wouldn't cry, he gave me a slap with the open hand, and he left me across the room, and I bit into my lip. I actually cut my lip, and as I speak to you, right now, I can feel that little scar still in my lip and the inside of my mouth. But that was my silence. My silence was his weakness. He couldn't get me to cry. And once I had took the stand that I wasn't going to cry, I stayed with it, you know. And because the rest of the class, you weren't going to start bawling. I just wouldn't cry. No, says I, I'm not crying. And that was it. And I didn't say it openly to him that I'm not going to cry. I just didn't cry.
Yeah.
I wailed, but I didn't cry. And that was the way. That was the only weapon I had against him, was me silence.
And you know, Frank, you just said to me, I can still feel the scar on my mouth and from the lip and the cut. And,
yeah.
How many years ago was that, Frank?
I'm 69 now. I'll be 70 next birthday. That was back, Joe, in the 60s. That was back in the 60s.
So
you couldn't go home.
But you were around, the point is, you were around 8 or 9 years of age.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You couldn't, and I was small, like, for me. I was very small. But, you couldn't go home. I could not go home and say to my father that the priest gave me an awful beating today. He would have just said, well, he didn't age you for nothing. And you'd have probably got a slap off him. Do what you're told the next time. But no matter what, if you did what you were told, you were hiss. If you didn't, look, you were damned if you did and you were damned if you didn't.
Yeah.
And that's the way. Now, I have to be honest and say, Joe, he was the only bad experience I had with Christian Brothers. There was other Christian Brothers who were sound. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah. But it's something you remember.
Oh, God, and I'll tell you what, Joe. I'll tell you the worst of it.
60 years later, yeah.
Yeah. The hatred he feel. I don't hate anybody. I might dislike some people, but I don't hate anybody. Now, I can tell you, Joe, I hated him. And my best friend in school sat beside me. And we concocted a plan, Joe, that we got up on a certain railway bridge that's known to you and me, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
This railway bridge that's known to me and you. And we sat in it because we knew he was going to come over a certain canal bridge. And it was like something out of a Western, Joe. We were sitting there, two little... Oh, yeah, he used to say, Joe, he used to look at us and he said, oh, God, he put his hands up to the air and he said, oh, God, what did I do to deserve these urchins? This was one of his sayings, you know. But we got up on the canal bridge and we had an next minute, Joe. It was like something out of a Western. You could see the baldy head appearing over the canal bridge, walking down towards us. And we were sitting there. We were planning to drop these bricks on his head, Joe, but we bottled out. You know, and he kind of had a premonition. He sort of looked up at the bridge because we were looking down at Joe. He was there. He wouldn't have been 10 feet from us. You know, a big railway bridge. and he looked up and the blood drained from us. And we got up and we legged it and we got down to the another bridge and scampered down the drain pipe to get away. And we were going, oh, we were in an awful state. Did he see us? Because if he did, we're dead in the morning. But thank God he didn't.
You remind me of rereading Gabriel Byrne's, the actor, his memoir, Walking with Ghosts. He's a Walking with Ghosts, yeah. And he's an incredible episode, and he retails. And they set out to wreak vengeance in not a similar way, but they actually ambushed the brother. It was Drimna Castle in Dublin.
Yeah, yeah.
They ambushed the brother that had been savagely beating them. And they, much to their fright, one of them knocked him to the ground when he threw a stone or a small rock at him. Now, the brother was grand, thank God. But the next day, the headmaster stood up in front of, or the head brother stood up in front of the whole school and said, now, the boys who attacked brother, whatever his name was, I want you to stand up. And he said, no, it was like a Spartacus moment. No one stood up, as happened.
No one stood up. Well, we could have had a similar situation because we had, you know, on the railway tracks, Joe, there's all them big them stones.
Yeah, I know them, yeah.
We gathered up them and we had them all set in, a bunch for me and a bunch for him, me mate. And the plan was, as soon as he came within, we were dropping them on top of his head, Joe. I kid you not, Joe. This was what we planned. This was the plan. And when the time came, look at you, 8 or 9 years, we bottled it. Mm-hmm. Well, probably as well we did. God knows where we'd been caught, like, you know what I mean?
Stay listening, Frank, because Angie's not dissimilar in terms of her reaction. You were in fifth class, Ange.
Yes, Joe, that's right.
Yeah, and it was in the late 1960s, 1968. What happened?
Well, we kind of had a rumour that we were going to have the worst teacher in the primary school for that year.
God.
And we really dreaded it, yeah. And she was one of the older teachers, a lay teacher.
Yeah.
And so her bad name had gone before her.
Yeah.
So we all went in, sat down randomly, and she wandered in, had a look at us all. We were all terrified. And then she called my name out, and I stood up, and she said, you come down here. And she said, I want you to sit here, which was the front row of the class, right in front of her desk. I want you to sit in this desk for the rest of the year. And she said, and you're to stay there. So I didn't know why. I didn't understand it, but I certainly did as the days went by, because she then, from that moment on, I was weak at maths. We came from very big classes. So there was 40, 50 girls in the class. And there was bits of maths that you were going to miss and you could never catch up with. And when she spotted this, she took full advantage of it during the maths classes. And she would sit on my side of the desk and she would box me, punch me, dig me, because I wasn't good at the maths. I wasn't giving her the answers. But I got to the stage where I wasn't going to answer her anyway, because I was just terrified. My mind would go numb. And then I got to a stage where I was going somewhere else in my head. I just let her do what she liked because I couldn't win. And that would make her even worse. So her face would get very red and she would have spittle then starting to form on her lips. Mm-hmm. And she would start to spit all over the place and she would be in a right rant. And, of course, the rest of the class was very quiet at this stage. They were all glad it wasn't happening to them.
And so, you were 10 or 11 years of age.
Yeah. And my sister was a year behind me and she used to say, we'll have to tell at home. And I would say, no, you can't. Because as far as I was concerned, it was my fault. Years later, I tried to figure out why this happened.
Yeah.
And I came to the conclusion that I stole an apple in fourth class from one of my fellow students. And the teacher had been informed in fourth class, this particular teacher, that I had stolen the apple. So she made me get up and in front of the class apologise, which I did. I was mortified. I never did it again. Yeah. So I think probably back in the room where they all hang out, all the teachers hang out during the breaks, I think she probably told the story.
And you were punished for a year.
Punished for a year for an apple. Yeah, but I was very lucky because that year my parents moved house and she had been informed that I was leaving and we had been told we were going to have her again for sixth class. And I was halfway down the stairs leaving that day, and this big booming voice called me back up again. It was this particular woman. I came up and I stood looking up at her. She was a very tall, bony woman. And she smelled of carbolic soap as well, a horrible smell. I always associate sometimes with going into the toilets. And she said to me, "I hear you're leaving us, you're not returning." Of course, I never said anything. And she said, "You are not a very bright pupil and you won't amount to much in this life. But I wish you well."
You won't amount to much. And you met her subsequently on the streets of Dublin.
That's right. Back in 1979, 10 years later, funny enough, I was with my boyfriend, who is now my husband, and she was in Westmoreland Street, going by the EBS Building Society. It's funny the way you don't forget these things. You'll always remember. And I said to my boyfriend, "Oh my God, that's that woman, blah, blah, blah."
He said,
"Go up to her. Go up to her now." Yeah. I couldn't. I was just terrified. It was like I was 10 again. Terrified.
And that's what so many people are saying the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, and you regret
it's like I'm 6 again, 7 again, 8 again, 10 again.
Yeah.
Okay, Angie. Yeah. Thank you so much. I mentioned Gabriel Byrne a few minutes ago, and a lot of writers, Roddy Doyle has written about again, not in a novel per se, but about the beatings and spoken about the beatings in school. Gabriel Byrne has written about it and spoken about it. I know John McGahan has written about it in short stories about him being very badly treated in school. And John went on to be a teacher, but John had a reputation of being a tough teacher as well when he was a primary school teacher. But this is Roddy and then Gabriel talking about their experiences.
It was just an almighty shock, really, the level of violence, not just from the brothers either, but from the lay teachers as well, and an unpredictability to it. Some of the teachers, again, were grand. They were very pleasant. They were good at their subject. And others, there'd be an explosion, you know, an explosion that you could never anticipate. And somebody be on the ground. Now, I'm not saying this was a daily occurrence, but there would be somebody on the ground. I remember a guy in art, you know, art, being hammered by a Christian brother with a huge set square, one of those wooden, you know, big wooden set squares, like a crucifix almost, because he hadn't drawn his still life as the brother had wanted him to do. Apparently there was some true path when it came to drawing an apple. And I mean, at one level, there'd be the relief that at least it's not me being battered. And even though now it's a long time ago, we're talking about 1971, 72, 73, which is a long time ago, still very vivid and has been all my life, really. I'm very reluctant to call myself a victim, but there were occasions when I was beaten. There was one in particular, a teacher who wasn't one of my teachers, but patrolled the corridors during the breaks, looking for opportunities, I now know, to beat people, you know. And what age was I, 15 or so, with another group of people in the classroom doing what, you know, very mild, what we shouldn't be doing, really, a bit of messing. None of his business, frankly. And I was a teacher myself only a few years later on, and I knew it was none of my business. But he hauled us all out, and six of the best for each of us. And I thought I was being really cute by going to the back of the line, and he'd be exhausted by the time he got to me, but he wasn't. And that's a beating I'll never, ever, ever forget, because his sweat landed on me. And I didn't have the vocabulary at the time, but I think he was taking sexual pleasure from it all. There was a certain dark pleasure on his face.
The world that I lived in, from an educational point of view, was full of fear. And I feared being beaten, and I was beaten very regularly. And it did, like everybody else that I knew, it did affect my sense of myself. Maths was my bogey. I could never understand. To this day, I can't understand maths. I used to do these problems. I'd say, if it takes 4 men to dig a hole in 3 days, how many inches to the square mile is the Bishop of Cork? You'd look at these things and you'd say, what is this? So you'd be beaten for that. I would never contemplate beating a child. I have 2 children myself. I've never laid a finger on them, because I do know that with physical punishment comes humiliation, and with humiliation comes loss of belief in oneself and loss of confidence and dignity and so forth. Unfortunately, I experienced some sexual abuse there.
With the Christian brothers?
Yes. It was a known and admitted fact of life amongst us that there was this particular man, and that you didn't want to be left in the dressing room with him. And there were certainly boundaries, sexual boundaries were crossed. and it was mixed up with fear and ultimately with shame.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
One teacher who taught me from 1956 to 1959 used to put us children fighting against each other. One day, he made me fight my childhood best friend and neighbour. Another day, he put me fighting a girl, but being reared not to hit girls, she bet the living daylights out of me. He gave me 12 slaps for something of which I was innocent. Then I moved school in 1959, only to encounter a teacher there who used the stout end of a billboard queue to mete out his idea of motivation for education. I ended up getting expelled from that Christian Brothers school, to my great relief. After that, I was sent to the technical school and had the happiest 4 years of my education. I came second in my final exams.
I started school in the late 1950s and I'll never forget how excited I was until I got there. I was beaten with the edge of a ruler across my hands every day for 2 years. Further up the school, you could be caned for every stupid little thing, like not sitting straight enough at the table or not standing in a straight line or misspelling something or anything. If you didn't stand straight, the male teacher would grab you by the shoulders, pull them back and put his knee through your back. The pain was horrific. I was a 10-year-old girl. One day I failed a history test, so I got 10 slaps on each hand. I fainted with the fright and the pain, and only that a girl in my class caught me, I would have fallen into an open fire. I left school with no confidence at all, but with the treatment we all received, how could we be confident going out into the world?
In the 1960s, when I was 8 years old, a Christian brother asked me, how many ounces in a pound? Sure, I hadn't a clue. So he took out his leather belt and gave me, as they say, six of the best. Not alone that, Joe, but he asked another pupil to get my younger brother, age six, from another class to come down to the room. And he asked me again, how many ounces in a pound? I didn't know, so he whispered into my younger brother's ear the answer and told him to tell me. I felt so stupid. I remember going out to play in the yard afterwards and looking at my hands and how raw, red and swollen they were. I was in a terrible state, and nobody would come near me, not one of my classmates, all because I didn't know how many ounces in a pound. And you know, Joe, it's like it happened yesterday.
Margaret, we were listening there to Roddy Doyle talking about when he was a pupil, witnessing another boy being, attacked is the right word, being beaten by the teacher using a wooden triangle. And Roddy said it was like a big crucifix at one stage. What happened to you, Margaret?
Yes, Joe. Well, the year was 1972.
Yeah.
And I was in second year, age, say, 14, going on 15. And I was in the geography class, a subject that I really liked and everything. So this particular day, anyway, it came to the winds. You know, the northeast winds and southeast winds and all of that. But for whatever, I really didn't understand the winds back then. So I just didn't know the answer. So the teacher at the time was doing her HDIP. And I didn't know the answer. So, and that teacher also, they wore the gowns in those days, you know, that you got the graduation in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I didn't know the answer. So she came down to me. I can picture exactly where I was. And she got the wooden compass, and she gave me 20 slaps, 10 in each hand, of the wooden compass.
My memory of a wooden compass is it's pretty thick.
It was very thick and heavy, yeah.
Yeah.
So I bared it up anyway, and I didn't cry. You know, maybe I probably did want to cry, but I said, I'm not crying. And that's what she did. And afterwards, the class, my friends, they all said, she shouldn't have done that to you.
Yeah.
So that was my experience.
And what's the adult in Margaret telling your younger self?
Well, I just wish I had the courage to just, you know, stand up and just get out of that room and just get out of that school. Yeah. Because it was all, well, I suppose because she was doing her HDIP, I'm thinking back, she probably wanted everyone, you know, to answer everything perfectly for when she'd they'd come in to test her. And that school also, it was all about getting the honour back in those days, you know.
Yeah.
You have to get the honour, you have to get the honour, you have to get the call.
Yeah.
The honour being for honours to go to university,
that's
or the call was the call to national school teaching.
Yeah.
Like back then, I didn't even, I don't think anxiety, stress or pressure was in our vocabulary, you know, at that time. But that was what happened anyway.
It's shocking, shocking.
Shocking, yes, yeah. Okay, well, we would have been used to seeing punishment as well in the national school, you know, slapping and picking on people, on certain families.
I read out this document yesterday. I've managed it. I think it was written in 1918, before the state was actually formed. But we had an relatively good primary school system. From the 1870s, it was compulsory to go to primary school. But the document written by, it was called the National Education Section in Marlborough Street, where the Department of Education now is, written by two very famous educationists. In fact, they wrote a number of books, and it was P.E. Lamass and W.J. Dilworth, secretaries of the Office of National Education, Marlborough Street, Dublin. And nothing that we've heard, Margaret, including today, including you with the wooden compass, and over the 3 weeks, I cannot think of one single punishment that was allowed within the confines of the document that delineated corporal punishment. Everything that was done to you and all those young children was illegal, even within the borders of corporal punishment being allowed. It was all horribly, horribly and cruelly illegal. Thank you.
Right. And we didn't know that, did we? You know, we didn't think of complaining or
bizarre.
Anything.
But anyway, what was it? What is it? I still can't find out. I think the more I read, the more I am thinking it is. The level of it was, especially for young children, was peculiar to this country, was much greater than other countries. Is it about her ambivalence to violence? I don't know what was going on. But anyway, the why still echoes in my head from Edie from 3 days ago. Thanks, Margaret. Let me go to Kenneth. Yeah. Kenneth, good afternoon. 11 years of age and an egg. An egg.
Yeah, do you mind if it's to go back there and only have to back a bit of emotion over this.
Yeah.
But just, I was going home at a breakdown one day, and what we normally do, and throw the egg, and I just turned around and threw the egg, you know. No, not going back to school.
Yeah.
And it was quite old, the class, down to another class, right, you know. And the school teacher says, have a look at that boy's eye there. He says, he's a black eye, you hit him with an egg, you know. And I saw his eye, and I go, oh, God, what am I after doing, you know.
And Kenneth, was he accusing you of hitting another boy with the egg, or just...
Yeah, but that's what happened, like, you
okay,
know, when
I threw
the egg, I hit him, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, okay, you know, okay, so, okay, hit him in, yeah, okay. Good God,
yeah,
okay,
so, yeah. I always remember that, looking at his inches, you know, for his eye, you know. And then all of a sudden, your man stood him, he tore, and his two hands went back as far as he could, and he smashed me both ears with two hands, you know. And something telling me back in my head that he actually did it twice, but I can't really remember.
Okay.
But he hit me so hard, I tell you, I didn't know what happened. I couldn't remember nothing.
Yeah.
And then I remember going back to the class, and they sat me in the classroom, and I was looking around the class as to say, what's going on, like, no. Everything was mumbled. You know what I mean?
His punishment was on this young boy, this child, 11 years of age, his punishment was for, it wasn't allowed, by the way, it was illegal. He should never have done it, even within their guidelines at the time. His punishment was to take his two adult hands, look at your face, your little head in front of him, and move the hands out and impact both your ears at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Slap.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he did slap. I mean that, no, like, well, and, you know, I taught nothing. And then I went back to the class, and I was kind of looking around and saying, I could see people's lips moving, and that I wouldn't hear nothing. But at that then, I just put it in the back of my head. I felt guilty and the whole lot, so I buried it, you know. I never thought about it anymore.
Yeah. And did it have any effects on you? Because I was talking to a man yesterday whose brother was deafened. He lost the hearing in one ear from a box from a Christian brother, a slap.
Yeah, see, Roland then, another 40 years ago, I was about 15, I was watching the programme, and I was at about 10 minutes in the ears. Uh-oh. And I said to the wife, I said, I've had them symptoms there, buzzing in the ears. I said, look, not knowing nothing about it like that. And then I was changing job, and I went for a medical, and this medical, the hearing test.
Yeah, of course.
I went in, and when the doctor comes out, he goes, "Stuart, ladies, how bad your hearing is?" Sure. I said, "No." And then he says, "Were you in the army?" And I said, "No." He says, do you know how this happened?" I said, "I don't know." So I went home and I started thinking, and then I go way back to the childhood then. Mm-hmm. And realise I have all this humming and buzzing in my ears.
Well, that sounds like tinnitus.
Yeah.
From the smack. Good God.
Yeah. So the impact of his hands, like, no? And I never spoke to anyone. I never talked to anyone. Never said that to anyone. Mm. Forgot about it. Buried it. I think it was probably the guilt of what I did to the young fella anyway. Like, no, as well. Yeah. As I deserved. There's all the slapping, all right. But, then moved on from that into the secondary. So we had some of the teachers there, they just loved what I would call the weapons. One for the science teacher, and his first year in the classroom, let's say, he introduced himself. "These are my four B's," he said. And he put out four letters. And he said, "Browns, bad boy, bashers." Four letters, that's what he had. Four
Browns, beats. Bad boy,
and he
bashers.
He loved it. He just got pleasure out of it. And naturally enough, if you've got anything wrong, you'll get the four B's, like, no? So that's what his pros. Oh, I always remember him saying it. By four B's, Brown, bad boy, basher.
Okay. So, the other little thing, that's my mistake at Gloucester, when this teacher was preparing to give you this punishment by slapping your hands and this move, slapping your ears with his outstretched hands at the same time, he stood on your foot so you couldn't move back.
Couldn't move back, that's right. Yeah, that's the first thing I noticed, the pressure on me toe.
Yeah, that is the action of a gouger. That is the action.
Yeah, and he was a big boy. And he was a young teacher as well, He was a young teacher at the time. You know, I was in both fifth class and I think he was down in third class or something. He was a young teacher as well. I checked him out there a couple of years ago because when I realised this with my ears and look back and what happened, I kind of wanted a bit of justice off him, I actually checked him out. And I never got around to them. But I actually enjoyed school, I'll say that.
Okay, okay. But that episode obviously had long-lasting physical effects as well.
I think the last time then one of them hit me then, I was in the classroom and your man just killed me and now merciful belt in the back of the head. And I say, I must have met the desk, I say. Yeah. But when he hit me so hard, I just jumped up straight into his face and I thought, "You ever hit me again?" And that was an ass of it then,
It's terrible that you had to do that. Kenneth, thanks indeed. Joe at rt.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I could talk about the acts of abuse, psychological, physical and sexual violence that I witnessed, but I would like to talk about what it left me with. To this day, I can't spell properly. I get anxious when I have to spell. That's an everyday problem. I learned that violence was a solution to my problems. Well into my early 20s, fighting was a weekly occurrence. I have hurt people and I've been hurt by the young men who came from these schools. Then alcohol became my best friend. That helped me with my anxiety and future depression. That took me years to get over. On the positive end, I'm very well and sober, but I didn't have to have such a hard start.
In sixth class, I was considered a good girl. I was put sitting down at the back of the classroom beside a bold girl to turn her into a good girl. One morning, after we had said our full 5 decades of the rosary, we were saying our private prayer to our guardian angel. The girl started pretending I was listening to her private prayers with her guardian angel, and I thought this was hilarious and started laughing. The nun exploded. I have never recovered from what happened next. The nun got a bottle of holy water and kept splashing me with it, saying, "Devil, come out of this child." I was traumatised and I really believed that the devil was in me. It seemed like an eternity. I was so terrified and frightened. I felt I had committed the worst possible sin. And even worse than that now, I was possessed by the devil. When school finished, the nun told me to stay back on my own. And she then proceeded to lock me into the classroom alone. I was so frightened and I just didn't know what to do. The nun didn't return until 4 p.m. to let me out. I cried myself to sleep that night and many nights after that, believing I had fallen out of favour with God and now I belong to the devil. School was never quite the same for me after that, and I honestly believe I never reached my true educational potential.
Stephen, I know your parents were very into education, primarily like so many, because they wanted you to get a better education than they did. But you say fear of school led to mitching, and the mitching landed you and your parents in the family court. Stephen, what happened?
Yeah, Joe, I went to school between 1962 and 1972.
Yeah.
And the nuns was the first protocol to be taught by them. I learned virtually nothing. I was constantly beaten.
Take your time, Stephen.
But,
yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm okay. Yeah. If you didn't get literary, if Irish especially, if you got the fodder in the wrong place, you got a belt, and a couple of the nuns, one of the nuns had a stick.
Yeah.
And she would use the stick. It was like there was little corners on it, and she would use that stick in your hand. So what happened was, Joe, the fear got into me. And I think it was around then, and I went on the midge even then. I went to school. My mother would leave me to the entrance of the school, but I'd watch her walking off, and then I'd leg it out of the school, and I'd go hiding in a dump. I'd go hiding in where old houses used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually what happened was, the inspectors, remember them, Joe?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the kigger.
He knocked at the door. First of all, sorry, the nuns wanted to see my mother. My mother went up and they said, "He hasn't been in school. Where has he been?" Of course, my mother hadn't a clue. So she had a talk with me because I was so young. And she brought me straight down to school and made sure I went in. But it didn't make any difference, Joe. You were still his. You were, you know, you were called names. They had a dunce corner as well, which I think I was in it once. Because I just couldn't take in the education because I had the fear. So eventually we left there and I went to secondary school. And of course, there was the Christian Brothers. And that's when the fun really started. The constant beating were from Christian Brothers and lay teachers. And we had a particular lay teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He used to come in a tweed coat and he had a short and tie. He would change in his car. I used to watch him. He used to take his shoes off in the car, put his driving shoes off when he was going home. But when he was in school, he changed his shoes to another shoe. His letter, he had a letter and he had it in his pocket of his tweed jacket. And he'd walk up and down. If you didn't get anything right on the board, whack, whack, whack. One day he was in school and in the class, and next one was a knock at the door, and the school had a fire escape.
Yeah.
It was 3 floors up, and next of all there was a big man standing at the door of the school, of the class. Next of all, the Christian brother went over. This was another Christian brother, went over, and he says, "Are you blah 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 blah?" And he says, "Yes." He grabbed him, Joe.
Yeah.
He put him over the railings.
Oh.
He actually had him upside down on the railings. He was about to drop him three floors. He said, if you ever touch my son again and leave him in that state again, the bruises and the marks on him, I'll kill you. And he got him. And he flung him in back in through the classroom onto the floor. He came in then and he shouted at him, you touch any of them children there, he says, I will kill you. But I went on the Michigan job because I couldn't hack school. Yes. I just couldn't have it. The fear. So what happened was the inspector again called up to my mother. So my mother said, no, she said, What are you doing? You know you could go to R10.
Yeah.
So I tried to get back to school. And I remember the only times I enjoyed school, Joe, this is crazy, the only time I enjoyed school was Friday afternoon. They would allow us to read books. And I love books. Yeah, I love history. Yeah. I love all that stuff.
Brilliant.
And that was the only escape I had. And it was Ladybird books, which I loved.
Yeah.
And the escape I had looking at them photographs and them drawings was just amazing. But it didn't... We still got beaten. We still got hidings from different teachers in the place. And the thing that sticks in my mind is the whoosh of the when they walked by the Christian Brother. That sound that the outfit they wore and the nuns. Mm. And they'd have, because years ago they used to have the big thing on their head and it'd go by it.
The wimple, yeah. The
and you knew, yeah. I wouldn't be. So what happened was another time, one of the teachers, this guy who used to wear the tweed suit, he asked to bring in toys, believe it or not. So any hobbies that we were interested in. And I was interested in science. I was interested
good
in space.
Lad.
I was
good
interested
lad.
In everything. Astronomy.
Yeah.
So the moon landing was at the happening. So I brought down models, Airfix models of the lunar landmark.
Oh, fabulous.
So he's looking at this on the table.
Yeah.
And he comes over to me and he says, what's this? So I said, well, that's the astronauts and thing. And he turned around and he said to me, you have an interest in space? I says, yeah, I love science. I read books on science and I can tell you all the planets. Oh, well, tell me the planets. And I told him that. So he turned around the next breath and he says, well, because you're not well educated, he says, you'll never be anything. And he walked away. And that stuck in my brain. And my confidence, like everybody who's been on this radio to you, that confidence is destroyed.
Yeah.
But I went on the Mitch again.
Okay.
And it was caught this time.
Yeah.
My mother got me up and the inspector arrived. Sorry, a letter came through the post and he says he's to appear in court. In all places, Temple Bar, I think it's called the courthouse is down there.
Dolphin House, yeah.
That's the one. That's the
building, yeah. Behind the Clarence.
So we went up on the winter's evening and I remember distinctly walking across Capel Street Bridge. And we went up the stairs, and it was like being in some sort of Victorian courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
The judge is sitting there, the inspector is sitting there, and the inspector said, well, he's been missing, blah, blah. I don't know what terms he used, and he hasn't been in school. And the judge turned around to my mother and started saying, why isn't he in school? And my mother tried to explain, but she couldn't, she didn't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, well, he says, today he's going to go to R10. It didn't happen, Joe. It didn't happen. My mother pleaded, God love her. She pleaded with him. And he says, we give him the last chance.
Yeah.
But you can assure him, R10 is where he's going. And we all know about R10, Joe.
The horror of R10.
But Joe, you know what? I left school at 14 and I got a job in a factory. Eventually, then I joined the Defence Forces.
Okay.
I had a brilliant career in the Defence Forces.
Right.
I got great education off them. They had courses there to help people, believe it or not, like me. Defence Forces have been getting an awful lot of slack lately, but I can tell you one thing.
Brilliant.
If you know where to go and you know who to talk to, they'll look after
brilliant.
You. So I got education in there.
Yeah, but I hear your tears, Stephen. And they're the tears of a 10-year-old.
Yeah,
that's what you're leaving. And by the way, it's good that you can reach them. It's good that you can connect with them, and it's great that you can talk so honestly and so clearly about the awful horror and the fear.
I have one theory on all of this.
yeah.
And especially the Christian brothers. Now, the Joe, believe it or not, I still have a few prayers. I still go to church and have a few prayers. I'm not brushing everybody with the same stick.
Yeah.
But the horror that we went through in them schools, nobody in the older, younger generation don't understand. You just don't understand. And I have a firm belief that, I'm not being bad, but you remember years ago, you had a, you know, big Irish family. One was a teacher, one was a...
Yeah, priest and all,
And I reckon that some of these nuns and some of these Christian brothers didn't want to be in them jobs. Yeah. And it's pure frustration at taking it out on kids who, by the way, Joe, the vast majority from the inner city, I'm from the inner city, didn't have much. We had nothing. Yeah. We had slums. Some of us were living in slums. We had to put all sorts of stuff in our home. And then you had to go in and put up all of that, getting beaten.
And your family now, Stephen, I know you're...
I'm a grandfather now, Joe.
Congratulations.
But, you know, when you were playing them voices during the week, I couldn't get my head around it, that I actually sounded like them when I was in school.
Yeah.
You know, you see your own grandchildren, and you know, at that age, and that's tiny.
The sweet innocence. Yeah, they're tiny, vulnerable. And remember, as I say, Stephen, the vast majority of the people that have contacted us over the last 3 weeks, we're now coming up to the 20th hour of non-stop testimony about physical punishment, were in primary school. They were 4 years upwards, believe it or not, to 10 or 11. Stephen, thanks.
Sorry, Joe. I'll let you go now. Listen, this has been a brilliant time for people to talk.
Yeah.
And thanks very much. Thank you and your team.
You.
Your team has been brilliant.
Yeah.
Your team has been brilliant. But I'm saying is that this should not be forgotten about. What people went through. And everybody on this program has been, our confidence has been destroyed.
Yeah.
Everyone.
But
thank God we all got stronger and we got through it.
Lovely note to finish on, Stephen. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. And mind yourself, Stephen. Mind yourself. Joe with RT. What a brilliant man. Joe with RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
It's because so few were able to campaign against corporal punishment when it was at its height in Ireland, that their names have featured so much in the last 3 weeks. Dick Clear of Reform, Senator Owen Sheehy Skeffington. We spoke to both their adult children. Constance O'Carroll was another name that was mentioned. Cyril Daly, Dr. Cyril Daly on the north side of Dublin. And Frank Crummy. Frank, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Joe.
How are you?
Not too bad. I'm getting very old.
Is that... You knew that was going to happen, Frank.
Well, yes, I did.
Okay.
But I heard him talking about the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And I would be talking about my school days in the 40s.
Okay. And Frank, what propelled you? I know I'll call you an own voice, but you'll tell me you had people around you. But what propelled Frank Crummy in the 60s and maybe before that to stand up against this barbaric punishment, physical punishment in our primary schools?
The thing that hurt me so much was that the good Christian brothers and the good lay teachers stood idly by and did nothing to protect the children.
Yeah.
I mean, you know the old saying, for evil to triumph, it is important that good, do nothing. The good people do nothing.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what happened with the Irish Christian brothers. They were evil and should have been a proscribed organisation from the very beginning. But I remember the first experience I had. I was in the Christian in class, and I was sitting in the front row, and a little boy came in late, Eddie, and it was winter time, and he still was in his bare feet, and his coat was pinned with a safety pin, and his face was red, probably with the cold, and I doubt if he had breakfast. But the bullet beat him with the leather for coming in late. And then told him to go down and sit down. And you know the way the brothers walked up and down the classroom between the... I just happened to look back. And the brother, when he got level with Eddie's desk, he put his foot under and stood on his bare foot. And I couldn't resist it. I said, fuck up, leave him alone. He left him alone. Right, he beat the shit out of me. But you see, I was, had my nice little pullover, my shoes and socks, and I was going home to a mammy who thought I was a genius.
Yeah.
And, you know, to a nice meal, for Eddie wasn't. And this evil kid of a brother, and by the way, he was one of the notorious brothers in the school.
Yeah.
He was one of the ones that, you didn't include him in being notoriously bad. Whereas the others were so, I mean, they were proud of, the other time I personally was tortured, one of the brothers apparently had an accident and was limping. And from the back of the group, someone called him a limpy bastard. Mm. Now, he didn't know who called it to him, but he knew that I did. And he took me into the glass house where they grew the tomatoes. And he put me on the ground and he twisted my legs until I screamed the name of the fellow. I mean, I gave up his name very quickly, you know, to save myself. And it was so evil, so that at the end of the school year, when I did my primary, you see, I had one major handicap. I could never write, but I loved reading, and I loved maths, and I loved subjects like history and science, but I could never write. And I noticed one day that this particular brother would give us something to write, everybody in the class to write. Okay. And because I couldn't write, I would observe him. And I realised that he was looking out the window, glued at the school across the road. And it entered my mind, oh, Jesus, that's because the girls are coming out of school. Mm-hmm. And he would turn around when he was finished and he'd just pick a child at random and beat the hell out of him. He was obviously sexually frustrated.
Yeah.
And you see, it was frightening what happened. I then left Crumlin and got into Sing Street. And very quickly, I made a decision of my own that I would get expelled as quickly as possible. Because, as I said, I couldn't write, but I could read and I loved things. So I was bitching, but the late teacher taught science and maths. So I'd sneak into his class and he would say to me, are you in or out today? Meaning, he knew I was bitching. And I would tell him, but the evilness, you see, I couldn't understand. I was called stupid, naturally. And I would match and go to the libraries and read books and go to the museums and things like that. So later on in life, I decided I better do something about this because they were all held in high esteem. And as I said, I believe that the Irish Christian Brothers, for the work they carried out in places like Artane and Netherfrack, should have been a prescribed organisation, as should many of the others.
But Frank, how did you get involved as a campaigner? When it was
I decided I was talking
to my brother. What age were you when you became a campaigner?
I was a young married man at this stage.
Okay.
And I was having lunch with my brother-in-law, Christy Morris, and we were talking about the horrible things, you know.
Yeah.
And he said to me, what are we doing about it? So we put a letter in the paper and to organise a meeting in Boyfield's Hotel. And the people that turned up and backed me up and the people that, the stories they told. And of course, with any organisation, the more publicity you get for it, the better.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the men who came to the meeting was an American and he was doing a HDiv in English at Trinity. And he said, if you get on the Late Late Show within 6 months, I will give you £200. Which was a lot of money.
To get the organisation going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I organised a bonfire at the Department of Education with a headstone, the death of Irish education.
Okay.
And we burned 19 and leather straps belonging to the Irish Christian Brothers because the firm that was making them had just gone into liquidation.
Okay.
So we went along and bought them.
So I remember watching a rerun or archival of that. That was a famous late because it was all about punishment, wasn't it?
That's all.
A whole audience.
And I was very nervous, you know, being young. Yeah. You'd never been on teddy before. But I wasn't a fool. And Cyril Daly was on it. He would have supported me.
Yeah.
But Senator Sean Brosnan and Paddy Crosby were on it.
Yeah.
And Jay himself, whom I loved dearly, said I was insinuating I was a crank.
Yeah.
And at the end of the programme, didn't I catch the camera? And I knew we were running out of time.
Okay.
And I said, and as I sit here tonight, the Irish Christian Brothers are sexually and physically abusing our children.
Wow.
Boom, boom. And the music came on, and a man came up in the audience then and punched me in the face.
Oh, God.
And I know that man's name to this day, and I know of man's wife.
Okay. But, and you mentioned, stay there, Frank, because you mentioned Cyril Daly. Of Toddy Daly, who's Cyril's son. On the line, Toddy. Good afternoon. Tell us a bit about your father and how we know how Frank became involved, mainly because he was a victim and a witness. How did your father become involved, Toddy?
He became involved in, I think, about 1966, around Christmas that time, when my oldest brother came home from school in the north side of Dublin, run by a religious order.
Okay.
Having witnessed boys being strapped, he wasn't strapped himself, but he witnessed them being strapped, and he was upset by it. And my dad, who'd been at Christian Brothers School himself and had received it and so on, I'm not sure how much he'd thought about it in between times, but he suddenly thought, what the hell is this about? And he rang up the school and spoke to the headmaster, and he said he didn't want his son witnessing violence.
Okay.
And the initial reply he got was, in that case, you can take him somewhere else, Dr. Daly. And that started it. And then, interestingly, one of his first articles then, in about 1967, I think, in the Irish press on this, that the lay young woman who taught my brother actually came up behind him one day, my brother, and said, I agree with your father.
Brilliant.
Which is interesting. And he tried to move school then to a national school in the area, but he was clearly thinking blocked from doing it. My older brother and myself said we were going to go to this school, and he ended up making an appointment with, and got an appointment with, John Charles McQuaid, and asked him to sort it out, basically. And
okay.
He did. He did give him a place. But I suppose one thing I want to emphasise is that, and I think it's been underplayed, and maybe the campaigns have been a bit marginalised in some of the reporting, is that there was a sustained and vigorous campaign against corporal punishment and against the incarceration of children in industrial schools, and that it was successful.
Eventually.
I mean, it was successful.
Yeah.
Well, eventually. And for whatever reasons, I mean, a lot of the campaign has been underplayed in, I think, in the media since, and also, say, in the Ryan report, my father's campaign isn't mentioned at all. But just to give you some idea of it, I mean, he put an advertisement in the newspapers asking people to write to him. And just like you've been hearing for the last couple of weeks, he got hundreds and hundreds of letters in the door. And I, as a 6 or 7 year old, remember collecting them up for him. And there were people giving him names and addresses, and some giving them accounts of brutality they'd experienced. He put these 8,000, I think, plus names into 2 leather-bound volumes and went up to the Doyle and presented them to Brian Lennon, who was the Minister of Education at the time.
Lennon
who I think
Senior.
More or less said, Brian Lennon Senior. He then actually petitioned every TD in the Doyle with a postcard asking them, did they want the cane and the strap removed from Irish schools, yes or no? And he got loads of positive replies to that. Interestingly, Gareth Fitzgerald crossed out removed and said phased out for some reason. And he was on the programme, I think, I'm not sure if Mr. Crummy mentioned it, but I mean the NBC programme where the American television station came over to make a programme about. And after that, and on the programme, he said that Ireland were a nation of savages. He said that that Ireland, because of the deformity of our personalities from these beatings, that there were many crocs in our society. And he was Brosnan in the Shannons, kind of said that he was being kind of basically unpatriotic and was smearing Ireland.
Yeah.
He also, just as another part of his campaign, he wrote to syndicated letter to American newspapers warning American businessmen coming to Ireland that the children would witness violence here.
Wow.
And he was told that he was smearing and undermining our economy. He didn't care about any of this.
Yeah.
And I suppose one of the interesting points, I mean, just to add to what Frank Crummy said there, I mean, interestingly, because, you know, he was regarded as a crank, like Frank Crummy was, I think, at the time, that after his appearance on that Late Late Show, I mean, Gay Byrne, in an article he wrote in the Evening Herald, said that he thought Dr. Daly was exaggerating things. So that was the general attitude at the time.
Yeah.
And And
well, we now know vividly. I'll just take a quick break and say with us, Toddy, and indeed Frank. Okay. We now know that it wasn't being exaggerated. What we've heard in the last 3 weeks, it was much worse than I think people actually believed. And this whole nonsense that used to come up about, it was only a few clatters, never did me any harm, has been well and truly exploded.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Frank Crummy. Frank, what was the backlash? You said you got a punch at the end of the Late Show because you said they were beating children, which is true. What was there a state backlash?
Are you speaking to me?
Yes, Frank,
yes.
Please. Sorry, yeah.
You see, we had support in various places.
Okay.
But the place where we didn't have support was at the top of the Catholic Church and at the top of Fianna Fáil. You know, let's be honest, De Valera and the likes of McQuaid, they all knew this was happening. They'd have had to, politicians live by knowing what's going on the ground. Yeah. And therefore they knew about it and they did nothing.
And Frank, what's your frame on it now? Why was it so rampant in primary schools especially?
Well, you must remember that the entry to the Christian Brothers was 14 years of age.
Good God.
And they were dressed in their black suits and their soft hats and marched along Donegal Strand. They hadn't a clue about life.
Their children.
I mean, I met one Christian Brother, a lovely, lovely man. And I got to talk to him, and he would sneak out. They weren't allowed to visit boys' houses, but he would sneak down to my house, and I would lend him my sister a bicycle and things like that.
Yeah.
And he eventually left the Christian Brothers. Now, there was one other brother, whom I won't name, a lovely man, and he rang me up during the campaign and asked, could he meet me? He said, I never taught you in school, but I knew you very well. So I met him in Jury's for lunch. And the first thing he said to me was, if my colleagues could catch you up a dark lane, you wouldn't come out the other end.
Yeah.
So we spent 3 hours. He was defending the Christian Brothers, and naturally I wasn't. And as a result, he kept in touch with me right through his life, and I eventually visited him in Baldoyle in the nursing home where he went before he died. Now, he said the happiest thing that ever happened to him in his life was joining the Christian Brothers at the age of 14. I said, but you stood out me, bye. And I was able to name the brothers to him because he knew who they were in the school, the ones that stood out. And another thing that happened, I was in the playground one day and there were older boys and there was a neighbour about 2 years older, and I called him aside and I said, excuse me, you see those brothers over there? And I pointed out 3 different brothers. I said, don't be with them on your own. Yeah. And that was at the end of the conversation.
Frank, I've only a minute left, but I do want to bring in your daughter briefly, Liz Crummy, because do you realise now, Liz, how important your father is, Frank Crummy, and indeed Cyril Daly, and indeed Dick Clear, and indeed Constance O'Carroll, being a lone voice at a very difficult time, Liz?
Absolutely. I mean, I was the eldest of Frank's family. So when I went to school first, I didn't realise that all this was going on in the 60s at the time. And it was just that in senior infants, a nun came around the class and asked us all to hold out our hands. But Dad has always told us, if anybody ever asks you to hold out your hand or to be slapped, you say, oh, my daddy says I'm not allowed.
Brilliant.
So at the age of 5,
brilliant,
I remember just saying, oh, my daddy says I'm not allowed, and no one else got slapped. I didn't realise behind the scenes Dad already had said to the nuns after that incident, not only is she not to be slapped, but she's never to witness anyone being slapped. So I had a charmed existence through school, and I am so proud of the work that he did,
and
I know that it was hard fought for.
And I know as we finish, Liz, it's so important that you mention the 5-year-old A five-year-old was being was lined up to be slapped and said no. Yeah. My daddy said horrific.
Yeah.
Thanks indeed, Liz Crummie. Thanks to the great Frank Crummie. Thanks to Todd Daly, son of Cyril. By the way, as you know, I've mentioned loads on RTE.ie /helplines. Credits on sound was Jamie Doyle, broadcast coordinator Janice Furphy, researcher Richie Byrne, producer Rachel Graham, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.